ओम ज्ञानचिदानन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes a very practical observation that the how the assembly house in the state is in proportion to the dignity of the state. It should be. It's expected to be like that. We see that the British, they built so many big buildings in London during their empire days, which keeps the country running on even now, because tourists come to see all these buildings. They brought marble and stone from all different countries of the world. So, if you expect in a state, the palace of the king or the state assembly house, it doesn't just look like a little apartment. Even Prabhupada was saying, he was talking about kshatriyas in Varnashram communities, he said that the kshatriya, he should live in a big palace. He has to impress others. Should be impressive. So we would expect that in the heavenly planets, the assembly house of the demigods, that would be on a level concomitant with their dignity. They are the topmost persons in the material world, at least from the material point of view. But when Krishna comes, then he's the topmost person in the material world. So, Krishna took the Parikrama Sudharma assembly house by force. Actually, Indra should have given it. Instead of fighting Krishna that you don't take the Parikrama, he should have given it without even waiting, just like the Syamantaka jewel. That should have been given to Krishna. He was living in Dwaraka. Satrajit. He was living there too, so the best thing should be offered to the king. That's the idea. So Krishna is the king of all kings. Indra is sometimes known as Mahendra. Indra means king. So he's sometimes known as Mahendra, which means a great king. But actually these names are all meant ultimately for Krishna anyway. He is the king of all kings. There's one name of Durga, Raja Rajeshwari. She's known as the controller of the king of kings. But then Krishna is also controlling her. Actually, she's controlled by Lord Shiva. And then he's subordinate to Krishna. So, Krishna should be offered the best of everything. That is the principle of Krishna consciousness, that the best of everything should be offered to Krishna. Deity worship, one should offer the best. That's why you see, traditionally people like to offer gold, jewels, and apart from that, the best fruits, the best flowers should be offered to Krishna. The best of everything should be offered. We see that, just like in Jaipur, Jai Singh, he made the palace for himself, and he made another palace for Govindaji. And the idea was that he was Govinda, the deity. So the idea was that actually the king is Govinda, but he's, as his servant, he is ruling the kingdom. And that should be the attitude of the king, that he is the representative of Krishna. If he has such an attitude, then he's actually a representative of Krishna. If he doesn't have such an attitude, then he's not properly qualified as a king. Just like a guru, he is accepted as a guru and offered service, respect, facility, and so many different things, gifts are offered, because he's supposed to be a representative of Krishna. But if he's not a representative of Krishna, then he's not a bona fide guru. So if one is not, if a king is not actually serving as in the capacity, presenting himself as a servant of Krishna, then he's not actually qualified to be, he's not properly situated as a king. So Indra, again, made a fool of himself, as he often does. Of course, the bigger position you are, the easier it is to... The bigger position you are, the bigger fool you can make of yourself. child is a child and is always acting foolishly, but it's just expected. But if a grown man acts like a child, then he's not taken very seriously. And generally someone is not elevated to a high position if he acts childishly. But if they do so, that will be noticed. Of course, we see politicians, they mostly act in a childish manner. The things they say, the way they conduct themselves, the way they quarrel amongst each other, and the name calling, is very childish, but that's accepted. Politicians, somehow or other, despite being foolish and despite being totally rascals, still people take them seriously, they're respected. Just goes to show the condition of modern society. So of course Indra was many thousands of times better than modern politicians in every way. But still he made a basic mistake. He failed to recognize Krishna's superlative position. Of course it could be said that Krishna, he was performing Naralila, he was performing pastimes like a human being. And so he offered respect to Mother Yashoda, offered respect to Nanda Maharaj, Vasudeva and Devaki, to Yudhishthira, to Bhishma, to so many. He offered respect to, as if he was an ordinary human being. So from that point of view, Indra could have considered that, well, Krishna's performing this human-like leela, so in that sense, it wasn't inappropriate that the best things still be in the heavenly planets, and only the best things on the earth planet be there in Dwarka. But then if Krishna himself expressed that he wanted them, then he should have acquiesced. So we could say that maybe it wasn't so bad for Indra not to have just offered all these things, knowing that Krishna can make a situation like the heavenly planets in Dwarka without Indra's help. He's quite capable of doing so. So if he doesn't do so, that's probably his own wish. But then if he specifically asks Indra, then he should have given Parijat, Sudharma, Samriha. Otherwise, Krishna doesn't have to ask Indra. He doesn't have to take away by force also. He can make hundreds and millions of Parijata trees just by his own desire, and better than what's in the heavenly planets. Just like when Kandarpa came to Nara Narayan Rishi and tried to tempt him by showing beautiful women. So Nara Narayan Rishi, he watched. And then from his own potency, he created so many beautiful women, more beautiful than those that Kandarpa had brought. So Krishna could have done that also, but he had something to teach Indra also. There are different ways of teaching people, according to the circumstance and according to the person. Krishna taught Kandarpa according to his need. And of course Naranarayan Rishi was enacting a different role to that of Krishna also. He was showing the role of a yogi, tapasvi, one who is practicing austerity. So often the tapasvis, they have a tendency to become angry because they're holding their desires within them, and that can lead to frustration. That's why sometimes you see yogis, they're angry kind of people, or very, very austere people. They can sometimes be angry also, like Durvasa Muni. Very angry person. So the dancing girls that came along with Kandarpa, sent by Indra, they were afraid that Naranarayan Rishi would curse them for having attempted to spoil his austerities. I mean, it's not a very ethical thing to do if someone's performing austerities and then you try and break it by making them try to fall down. It's a very envious thing. Indra always does this. It's a very envious thing to do. So they were afraid of being cursed. Just like Kandarpa, he already had experience. And he was sent by Indra to break the austerity of Mahadev, Lord Shiva. So as a result of that, he became ananga, he became bodiless, he got burned up by the fire emanating, the angry fire emanating from Rudra's eye, Lord Shiva's eye. Another name is Rudra. So he already had experience, you know, going to tempt these yogis. I mean, what can you do? It's like Indra tells you to do. If you don't do, Indra will punish you. And if you do, then maybe the yogi will punish you. It's like Marichi. He was, Ravana told him that you come and take Lord Ram away. So Marichi thought, well, if I do it, I'll be killed by Ram. And if I don't do it, I'll be killed by you. Better be killed by Ram than a rascal like you. So that was the position of Kamadev in that situation. He was very afraid that Naranayan Rishi will tempt me, but will curse me. But Naranayan Rishi, he didn't do so. He was performing austerities, but he was completely calm and peaceful within. Outside, a yogi looks calm and peaceful, but you have to be very careful, because inside there may be so many frustrated desires and so. So that's the Maya. That's how Maya acts. That often the yogis, they'll just become angry, and then all the austerity, if they did for so many years, if they curse someone, they lose all or most of the results of their austerities. All the I curse you to become a stone or something, and then they have the power to do that. But the power, how did they get that? By performing their austerities. So they lose the stock of their austerities. So either way, if the yogi falls down with the dancing girl, so to tempt them, or if they become angry, either way the stock of their austerities goes down and they have less chance of taking over Indra's position, which Indra is afraid of. So Naranara and Rishi, they weren't going to. They're very calm and peaceful. But Krishna was enacting a different role. He was enacting a role as Dwarkanath. When he was in Vrindavan, he didn't chastise Indra. He was playing the part of a small boy. And of course he chastised so many demons, but he didn't chastise Indra. He simply rebutted the rain. He made some arrangement that the rain that was sent to flood Vrindavan would have no effect. And in this way he just ignored it. He didn't tell him he was bad or any such thing. But now, this time, Krishna was in the mode of a prince fighting Kshatriya. He just given the earrings that had been stolen by Narakasura, he'd given them back to Aditi, he'd won them by fighting. So in this situation he was acting as a Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas, they generally, you know, if there's any disagreement, they settle it by force. So Krishna did that. He wasn't playing the part of a humble tapasvi. He was playing the part, actually he was playing the part of the personality of Godhead, which he is. He got the earrings back from Indra, from Narakasura, which Indra wasn't able to do. Can you imagine a big Kshatriya, he's a big king, and someone comes and steals his mother's earrings and he can't do anything about it. And still he's going on as Indra. It's not a very honorable position. But Krishna, actually, it's a humiliation for him. Krishna did it. He brought the earrings back. And so he showed that, you see, actually, I am superior to you. I'm serving you in this way, but it's like I'm serving you, but actually showing I have greater prowess than you. But still Indra, he wanted to show, no, I'm in a higher position than you. Even though, actually, he wasn't fit. He If he can't suppress the demons, then what's the use of his being the king of heaven? But Krishna, he didn't want to throw him out of his position, and he wasn't specifically humiliating him. He was doing something for Aditi, who was also his mother in a different incarnation, Vamandev. And Indra is also his brother in a different incarnation. So Krishna responded suitably. He defeated the forces of Indra. He didn't attempt to kill him, but he put him in his place, so to speak. Alright, you're the king of heaven, but only because of me. No, you see, it's not, you don't intrinsically have any power or position, whereas I do. Demigods that may be very powerful. You see, fire is the medium by which the universe is destroyed. Fire is very powerful, uncontrollable. But that power comes from Krishna. The wind, you see, the wind can blow down whole cities. All the planets are held in their position, but they're moving in the universe because of the wind. Unlike the modern theory of gravitation, according to Shastra, it's because of the wind. But that power comes from Krishna. So what to speak of Indra's power? In many ways, Indra's power is much less than that of the fire or the wind. There's a story, is there, in the Keno Upanishad of Lord Vishnu coming in the form of a yaksha in the assembly of the demigods, and they all said, well, who's that? So Agni approached him, and the yaksha asked, who are you? He said, I am Agni, and I can burn everything in the universe. So the yaksha threw down a straw. He said, burn it. He couldn't do it. He used all his power. He couldn't do it. And he went back and said, I couldn't find out who he was. And then Vayu came. So the yaksha asked him, who are you? I am Vayu. I can blow everything in the universe. He said, blow it. You see that straw? Blow it away. And he applied all his power. He couldn't move it even slightly. So then Indra came. It's described that Indra didn't want, Lord Vishnu didn't want to embarrass him, so he simply disappeared. So he also had to go back and say that. I also couldn't find out who he was. Then they understood it's Lord Vishnu. This is the Supreme Lord. So sometimes Krishna shows the demigods, they have so much power. But that yadaditya, what is that? Yadaditya tato tejam. Yachchandramasi yachchagno tattejo vidimamakam. Krishna says the shining of the sun, the moon, and the power and fire to burn, that all comes from me. Actually, Bhagavad Gita, it's most of the verses, it's called Gita Upanishad, it's simply summation of the Upanishads. And it's all same philosophy, but in the Puran, especially in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's explicit, it's clearly stated. Whereas in the Upanishads, it's sort of often in this roundabout kind of language. It's not so clearly stated. The same principles of that. That Krishna, he is above all the demigods. Yang Brahma, Varanendra, Rudra, Marutai, Stunvanti, Didyaistavaya. See, all the demigods, they are offering prayers to him. Divyaistavaya, then Sarva Veda. What is the next line? Vedai Sangha Krama Panishadaya Kayanti Yang Samaga. All the Vedas with the Puranas, the Upanishads, they're all pleasing Krishna. The impersonalist followers of the Upanishads, they don't see Krishna. Although he's indicated, sarve veda yat padam amananti, that this is the all the Vedas deal with one point. So that point is Krishna, who is above everyone else, as he shows by his wonderful pastimes, which are very difficult to understand for ordinary people. Because on the one hand, Krishna shows he's supreme, he conquers over Indra. On the other hand, he appears to be like an ordinary person. He conquers over Indra. Why? Because his wife wants him to bring some flowers back. Or he wants him to bring a flower tree back to her palace. So, it seems contradictory. Unless one understands Krishna as a person, and what it means to be a person, you can't understand him at all. That's why this impersonalism, they can never understand Krishna. Even in the mood of awe and reverence, you still can't properly understand Krishna. Therefore you see, just like Madhvacharya, he didn't want to accept Brahma Vimohana Leela, Gopi Leela. It's beyond the power to understand if you think of him only as a very great person. But if you think of him only as a very great person without understanding his intimacy and sweetness, you don't fully understand him as a person, what it means to be a person. It's more than being a position, it's being a person. As the intimate pastimes of Krishna, they are the topmost because they're the most personal. Madhva Sampradaya, they fought rigidly, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated that very much. They fought rigidly against the Mayavadis to establish that God is a person. But actually they didn't fully understand, at least Madhva didn't present, what it means to be a person. So philosophically they understand, but actual understanding of Krishna begins with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sampradaya. Hare Krishna, I'm going to finish there. Maybe take one question. If that papaya is kacha, then don't offer it. Keep it and cook it.
What is the difference between fearlessness of kshatriya or of devotee?
What is the difference between the fearlessness of a kshatriya and the fearlessness of a devotee? Well, if he's a devotee kshatriya, then he'll have the fearlessness of a devotee. And fearlessness of a kshatriya, that's also based on faith in Shastra, that I have nothing to lose, as Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. That if you win the fight, you enjoy the earth, and if you lose, you go to the heavenly planets. That's also inculcated in them, their sense of honor. One thing is they have nothing to lose either way. But another thing, that their sense of honor and the fighting spirit that they consider fighting and more important than their life, to win over and to protect. Their job is to protect, so their honor, their duty to protect, it's a very noble principle. As the fearlessness of a devotee, it's also based on faith in Shastra, but he's not so much concerned with enjoying this earth or going to the heavenly planets as going to Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.